Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington and I'm with producer Chris today. How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you doing, Doug?
Doing awesome. And today is one of those short episodes, and we've done some short episodes before and it turns out that they weren't that short. So today we're cutting out all banter. I said, we're not doing it at all. That'll be at the end for the sound check where we ramble on about some nonsense. But today we're going to hit one serious topic and one sort of, you know, lighter lifestyle topic. So the serious one that we're not going to solve the problem, but there's this idea of identity that we have with our career. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And then we'll talk about like food and grocery delivery. So again, that one's a little bit of a lighter topic, but I've been thinking about this identity thing because a friend of mine mentioned that he had a lawyer friend, has a lawyer friend who retired early, maybe early 40s or so. And then I don't know how long they were retired, but they decided to go back to work because they thought, hey, this retirement thing, that's not me. Like I want to be more productive. And what I keep, you know, finding in all these different conversations is people identifying with their career as their identity. And part of that is maybe their network that they have and maybe the power that they have at their job and the amount of money they earn. But it's about status too. So there's all these things tied up with their identity, usually with a career. And then maybe they get to retire and they're unable to sort of make that transition from, you know, powerful lawyer to retired person. And you don't have that status. And it's tough. And the thing is, when I look at that, I'm like, you failed. You failed retirement. You're not a personal failure. And not you, Chris, because you're making it work out. But when I see people go back to work, I'm like, what? Like, if you don't have to, then why would you? And I know there's, you know, people have different drivers and all that stuff, but that's one of the big topics we're going to get into. Now, Chris, how long have you been retired?
Coming up on 2 years.
Congratulations. Have you had any like drive to go back to work?
Not at all.
That's great. Now you are producer for the show, but this is a new skill. It was exciting. You get to work with me, right? That's really good. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So I'm curious, let us know like what your job was. Talk about your career and like, did you have any sort of like identity crisis as you were transitioning from, you know, career man to retired person?
I think for me, it was a lot easier to make that transition. I had personally lost my identity years ago. I guess it started when I was going to school, going to college, wanted to be an engineer. I do live up in the Seattle area, went to University of Washington, and this is late 90s, early 2000s. And so at the time up here, there weren't many tech workers. You know, there was Microsoft, but Amazon hadn't hit here yet. None of all the big tech you see nowadays. And so engineering back then was more of a niche career. And, you know, I would say maybe more respected in the area, you stood out more. So going to school, whenever I'd mention, oh, I'm going to school to be an engineer, you get maybe parents or friends, you get these oohs and ahs, like, oh, that's awesome. That's a good field. It's a hard thing to get into. So, you know, good for you. And so I don't know if that inflated my ego. And so throughout school, it was like, yeah, I'm going to be this prestigious engineer. And so I get through even my first job up here. Whenever I met someone, I would ask them, or they would ask me, you know, what do you do? I'm an engineer. And they're like, oh, cool. But then less than a year later, I moved down to the Bay Area in California. And so this is Silicon Valley. And down there, engineers, dime a dozen. They're a commodity. And so the same thing did not translate. You'd meet people and, hey, what do you do? Engineer. Oh, that's me too. And so it was nothing special. So I think at the time, I just thought, I'm just a normal person. You know, I'm just a worker. You know, this engineering thing, it's maybe not as cool as I thought it was. So I shed that probably like 20, 25 years ago. I'm just another normal person going to their job, earning their money, and whatever my title was, no big deal. And so I carried that with me throughout my career. And so when I transitioned a couple years ago into retirement, it was just that label I had that I used occasionally, it was gone. And I never really tied too much into it.
So it only took about a year for you to, like, the gloss lost its luster. Is that the right way to say it? Is that an expression?
From very early on, it was just, I never really tied too much into my career. It was just became another job to me. I do know a lot of people I worked with, they did have that, whether it be engineering, doctor, lawyer, that they did tie their kind of identity into their job. And I think it was because they had put so much work into it. You know, even engineering is only a 4-year degree, maybe 5-year degree if you stretch it out. Lawyer, I know it takes longer, doctor much longer. So I can see in those professions where it's just you invest so much of your time that becomes a part of you. It's kind of intertwined there. It's hard to separate that.
Yes. Yeah. There is that sunk cost, and it, you know, part of it is like the time spent on education. Then it's also like the professional network. And then it's the time at the actual job too. And it's like, when you leave that, it's like, oh man, I've put all this time and effort into it. I need to keep doing it. But, well, it's the wrong way to look at sunk cost, right? I mean, that's why it's tough to walk away from an investment. So interesting. Now, it sounds like because you were like, you know what, this is just a job, whatever. Did you struggle like sticking with the job and like doing a good job? Did you kind of tune out you probably got into like the middle management area kind of spot. So was it tough to keep being an engineer when you were like, I don't really care that much?
Not too tough. I think it's one of those habits you do. It's just, okay, I've been working here in this field for X number of years, and it's just keep on going. Just like the savings habit, you start it up, it takes a while to get going, but then over time, it's just one of those things that keeps on rolling by itself. And then I always had the goal in mind, you know, early retirement. So I think to get there, one of the tools I used was this job to create my W-2 income. And so it's knowing that, not that I necessarily loved it or had a passion for it, which a lot of my friends did. I just knew that if I kept on going, taking the money, investing it, keep on rolling, there was kind of an end in sight. So it didn't bother me too much, but I just felt bad too, because in the aerospace industry, a lot of people I worked with, that was their passion. They grew up, they loved planes, they loved space. And so that's what they wanted to get into. And a lot of people sacrifice to get there as well, you know, taking odd jobs or internships or second degrees, whatever they could do to get their foot in the door. And, you know, I was just someone who was using this as a tool to earn money. And I felt bad, like I was taking their spot away from them or taking up a spot.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And I like to tell people that too. It's like, if you can retire or you go back to work, like you're taking someone's spot that like, probably, you know, maybe they really want that job. So it's good if you don't work, but I could justify anything. So interesting. Okay. Any other thoughts before I'll tell sort of my story with my identity too, but anything else on your end?
Not for me personally, but I think like you were saying earlier too, I think this is a topic that comes up a lot. I've heard it a lot recently, you know, people retiring, struggling with that identity. What do I tell people now? Whether it be a job title or whatnot. So I'm definitely curious to kind of hear what you're hearing and also your personal experience.
I was playing pickleball the other day, and let's see. Yeah, I was the youngest in the group. And I think people were, say, 10 to 15 years older than me or so, roughly. And they're like, oh, what do you do? But one of the first questions, like, what do you do, Doug? I'm like, you know what? I'm like mostly like semi-retired, but I have a podcast in YouTube. And they're like, okay. And then later, like, they were actually curious, and the person, you know, wanted to get more information, but he was like, that's awesome. Like, how'd you do it? Like, you're pretty young. And you know, that dude was 60, and he's like, I still got to work and da 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 da. But anyway, Yeah, like I struggle a little bit telling people like what I do, and I'm testing things out. You got to know the audience and all that kind of thing. But it's like, at this point, like content creator, podcaster. So like, I'm okay with that identity. But the thing that I found going back and thinking, you know, just through the timeline of like the jobs that I've had and the things I've been interested in, all definitely pick up the identity of podcaster, YouTuber in this case, and I'm okay with that. But I hold on to it fairly lightly, and I'm very adaptable. And when I rewind a little bit, there was a stretch where I probably said, you know, I'm an online course creator and a marketer, and I'm selling these things. And that was about 5 years. It seems like, you know, every 5 years I'm shifting just gradually to the next thing. And before that, I was like, oh, I'm an IT project manager. Before that, I was like more in the consulting world. And I think, you know, depending on who's around you and what you're doing and how much Kool-Aid you drank at the corporate orientation or whatever, that's like how I reacted to it was highly dependent on like how much of that Kool-Aid that I drank. So like early on when I first got my job and I went to the orientation, you're around other management consultants full-time, other like career-long, you know, stints where people have been in that world for, you know, 15, 20 years. So it's really easy to pick up those kind of ideas and be like, oh yeah, like this is how we do stuff. You know, it's fucking 24 years old. They're flying you around. They're telling you that you're important. And I'm like, now thinking back, I'm like, I was an idiot. I didn't know what I was talking about. They barely gave me any training. They would like send me in to talk to people who spent 20 years working on a thing. And then I would like interview them and tell them what they were doing wrong. Like, I didn't know what I was talking about. They obviously knew what was happening. And it was like the Bobs from Office Space. You know, it's like, we were cutting jobs. Like that's what we were doing 90% of the time. So yeah, thinking back, I'm just like, no wonder they really didn't like us. And they were charging. Anyway, it's a rant on consulting, but I'm sure everyone's doing a great job out there. So when you're in that community and then they're telling you that you're important, it's like really easy to think that. But just like you, after about a year or so, I was like, a lot of this stuff is not adding up, and the travel was wearing on me a little bit, and I like slowly was checking out. And then like slowly over time, I was just like, you know what? This is all just kind of dumb. And I wasn't as adaptable as you were, because you adapted. You're like, ah, it's a job. I'm doing my thing. And I was more of a squeaky wheel situation. So that's how I ended up only doing about 10 years. But as I mentioned, I was like, going through these different sort of identities. And, you know, right now I'm like, I'm sort of in the FI space, and I'm kind of stepping away from the marketing stuff quite a bit. And I'm not really sure like what identity I have like right now. Like when someone asks you like, hey, what do you do? Or if I'm like this more philosophical conversation, Chris, like what is your identity? How would you tell me?
Unemployed?
Well, unemployed and happy.
You know what's weird too? So this is, it's kind of going the opposite way for me now. Shedding that engineer identity, which I never really had much. And so it was easier to leave that career behind. And for a while I did struggle. Okay, what should I tell people? Do I tell them I'm retired? Probably not. I just don't want to deal with all those questions that it brings up. I don't have time to get into my whole background and all this. But recently, I've been actually using podcast producer and editor. And whenever I bring that up, people are actually like the oohs and the ahs that I thought I would get with engineering like 25 years ago. I'm getting those now. Like I'll go to the dentist. Hey, what do you do? Oh, I produce and edit a podcast. I talk to some kids, parents on my son's football team. What do you do? I'm a podcast producer. Oh, cool. Never met someone like that in person. So it's kind of ironically in this kind of new career, new hobby identity that I'm creating, I'm getting more of that, you know, more interest when I'm doing now than when I actually had a real job. So it's very strange.
That is, yeah, throw in YouTube as well, because kids love YouTube, apparently. That's like one of those jobs, or when they interview kids or take the surveys, they're like, I want to be a YouTuber when I grow up. So you throw that in there too. You're full package, man.
I will now. I'm going to use that now.
Yeah.
I mean, like superstardom, you know?
Yeah, 100%. So yes, it's super interesting. And it, you know, the other part is because of, you know, the Phi community and like what you and I know and like what we took from our careers. We didn't do a good job adding caveats because we wanted to get a reaction from people. I did. but some people like their jobs and that is okay. Some jobs are super rewarding or they serve like your particular psychology. All that's good. Like we're not judging in that way. And if you go back to work, like, you know, if it's a financial thing, obviously, like that totally makes sense. But I do hear from people sometimes they're like, actually, we have a lot of money and I tried being retired, but I got bored. And I'm like, there's probably other stuff that you could have tried. And I feel like people go back to what's familiar. And you know what? I have my own blind spots. I'm sure I do the same kind of shit just in a different area. Turns out I just didn't like working for other people. So it's super easy for me to judge in this way.
Some people do love their jobs, and which is fine. I think you and I just never had that, it sounds like. But for the people who do, I mean, at least I respect that. It's just, I wish I had that.
Yeah. And certainly, you know, some jobs like inherently help other people. And like that is a good thing. And so like we acknowledge that. I think we're probably mostly talking about engineering jobs since we both had engineering or IT related adjacent jobs. So this identity conversation is going to be a thread in like several other interviews that I have coming up. And like I said, I mean, this keeps popping up in different ways. And I'm not 100% sure like where like my identity is. And I think, you know, sometimes it's a lot more obvious for people if they're a parent or like they're a really big, some sort of a volunteer thing in their, whatever community it is, could be a religious organization, could be community outreach, but like people could be like, oh yeah, like I'm serving these other people. And that totally makes sense to me. So anyway, if you all out there have questions on it, you can shoot me an email, Doug@milehighfi.com. Questions, thoughts around identity and like successfully, I mean, really it's like making the transition from like having a career to potentially not having a career or shifting into something else. Cause I mean, a lot of people retiring are so young, like Chris, you and I could literally like have a full other career and we don't even need to start it for like 5 more years. And we could have a whole other career that we do something else, potentially much more impactful than we did in our previous career where we spent a lot of time, you know. I think it's time to transition over to the other lighter topic. So I am curious about like grocery delivery and food delivery, like Uber Eats, and there's some other one. The thing is, I've never actually ordered like food delivery or actually groceries either. And I know some people, you know, they do it all the time. They're like, it saves me a huge amount of time and I don't want to go to the store and blah, blah, blah. But I've not used either of those services, which apparently blew up during the COVID timeframe. Now, Chris, are you a user of delivery services?
I am not. So I guess full disclosure for the listeners, when you brought up this topic, I thought you had done it and you wanted to talk about your positive experiences. And I felt like I was out of the loop. But then just talking, you know, before we started recording, neither of us have done this. So this would be a one-sided conversation, I believe.
So we're obviously the perfect people to talk about food delivery. So, we could flip it around so we could talk about the shit that we do know, which should be better because, right, we both apparently either go out to eat or we go pick it up or we don't eat out that often. So on the like prepared food side, like what do? You guys eat in most of the time? Do you go to restaurants? What do you guys do?
No, most of the time we just eat at home. So we cook our own food and we'll go out maybe once a week or so. It's just so much easier, I think, with all the kids' schedules and our activities, just to kind of have those meals planned because they're more flexible. I mean, we can just plan ahead and we come home for something, a practice, and my wife or I could be at home cooking. It's just, we can dive right into it versus even going to a restaurant. It seems more convenient, but then you actually have to go drive somewhere. You go sit down and order. You're still kind of wasting a little bit of time waiting for the food to come out and all that hassle. So I think for us, it's just so much easier and convenient just to be at home eating.
Yep. Makes sense. Often way healthier too. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know what you guys cook, but I mean, for us, like, it's usually like, I'm going to make steaks today and we have salad and it's rice. Sometimes we have potatoes, like nothing too exotic. Asparagus, of course, we have a shitload of asparagus. It's a staple, but it's very clear. It's just like there's meat and there's some veggies and some starch, like very clear what it is. Now, like, I mean, I like some decadent food occasionally, but going out all the time, I mean, it's just, it's unhealthy. So, or super expensive, because obviously you can order that kind of stuff, but you kind of have to scope it out a little bit more. So let's go back to the prepared food. Do you know anyone, do you have like good friends or anything or family members that do order food in all the time?
My parents do that. And I know we have some neighbors that do that. And it's just because I think from my parents' aspect, they're both retired, but I think a lot of it is just, they just don't want to deal with it. There's just two of them. They don't like leftovers, so it's easier for them just to go out. They can get dinner somewhere. Next night, they can have dinner, a totally different cuisine, not worry about doing dishes, handling leftovers. Mm-hmm. And we also have friends who have kids same age as ours, and they just have such a busy life. And instead of kind of doing that meal preparation or thinking ahead about it, it's just easier for them to go out and had a busy day. I'll go out and order pizza, or I'll get Chinese food. So I think it's just more of a convenience thing for those friends of ours.
Gotcha. And the dishes, occasionally I get that. I do most of the cooking here and Elizabeth does the dishes. I think she enjoys it and she wants to contribute too. But one funny thing, like every now and then, like if I make a lot of food and depending on what it is, I end up using like every fucking bowl. And like, she's mm-hmm. like, what happened over here? She's like, did you use every pot? Like there's all these utensils out. I tried to do some pre-cleaning along the way, but occasionally it's just like, I used everything. And she's like, what did you do over here? So I get the dishes sometimes, even though I don't typically have to do that. Now, I like going to the grocery store. I don't 100% know why. It's calm and chill during the time of day that I go, and I get to pick the meat and thump the melons and do whatever I want to do to pick the stuff. I kind of enjoy it. So I know, again, some people do grocery delivery and they're like, yeah, it saves me the trip and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, ah, you know what? I mean, I have the time and I actually enjoy it. So what's the grocery situation with you guys?
Yeah, I feel the same way too, Doug. I like to go personally pick out the meat, personally pick out produce, go look at it. I don't know. I guess I'm very particular. I know looking at tomatoes, sometimes half of them end up being kind of too squishy and maybe overripe. Some are more firm, and same with bananas, apples, all that stuff. I like to have it a specific way. And I think my fear with grocery delivery is, since I don't know who'll be actually picking up the items for me, do they not care? Are they going to be in a bad mood, in a hurry? Are they just going to go run to the shelf, grab the nearest tomato for me, toss it in the cart and not even look at the quality of it? Same with like apples, or same with even a lot of prepared foods, packaged foods. I'm a big expiration date, I guess, advocate. I look at that. I pay attention. I don't want anything close to expiring. So that's the first thing I'll check all the time. But I'm afraid just someone will just grab whatever's off the shelf. It's going to be expired, toss it in my cart, and they don't care. They're not eating it. So I'm just worried with that extra person in the middle handling my food.
Yeah, totally. I get all that stuff, and I'll give people a little hack here. Like if you don't pay attention to the expiration date, I know, Chris, you probably do this, but I don't get anything from the front. Like I go to the bottom shelf of like whatever it is, grab it from the back, check the expiration date. You can get like an extra week sometimes if you just get like the stuff that was just delivered. Of course, grocery stores trying to turn the stuff that's going to expire. So that, you know, that's at the front, at the top. But if you go dig around, you could find some stuff that has a much longer shelf life. And I'm weird like that. So I get the furthest. I get the, you know, a date that's further out, right? Except for like the other side of it is like, I'll get the expiring meat, but I make it that day. So it's all good. Yeah.
That's the best hack. I do the same thing. Like during summertime when we got the grill out, I'll go that morning and it'll be a big surprise. Like, I don't know what we're having for dinner tonight. It's whatever is on clearance.
Yep.
And it could be pork. It could be beef. It could be fish. But whatever is going on sale for that day, that's our dinner.
When I send Elizabeth, I'm like, yeah, I don't care what meat, like find something that is expiring and surprise me. It's like one of those, you know, it's like a contest, like bring me this food. Don't give me enough time. I'm going to make something great. Throw in some, yeah, like random fruit that doesn't go with the food. Put it in there. Yeah. You watch those shows?
Sometimes.
I used to. And then it got too much. They're like, all right, now everyone switch. And then they're like, all right, we're going to not give you enough time or the ingredients you need. And you have to make. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, you know what? I just want to watch people make stuff, you know? It doesn't have to be like a big contest. So anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, good discussion. I hope people enjoyed it. If people out there, listeners, if you have any thoughts on delivery, or Chris and I missing something, if you're on YouTube, you can leave a comment out there. You could send me an email. It's also in the show notes. And actually, I always forget to mention this. We have a Buy Me a Coffee page. So there's a handful of people that support the show. And if you do want to support the show, that's a great way to do it. It goes directly to help pay for the software that we use and the hosting. Some stickers sometimes that we pass out, some t-shirts, that sort of thing. Additionally, we have a support page. So there's a link in the description. There's just some different affiliate programs that we're a part of. And basically, if you buy something, we get a small commission. Usually it's like 10 or 15%, depending on what it is. And it's stuff that you're going to, you know, hopefully use and buy anyway. So have a look over there. It's a great way to support the show. So Chris, it's been cool talking to you. It's always fun. Now, you have a blog, and I want to make sure you have time to let people know what you write about there, what the name of it is. It'll be linked up as well.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. So I do have a blog with one of my friends called Epic Financial Journey, and we talk about financial independence, personal finance, kind of family life. So just a lot of random weird ramblings. So kind of today's a sample of that. So if you enjoy that, come check us out, Epic Financial Journey.
Very good. Cool. Yeah, we'll link it up. Actually, Chris, you'll literally link it up. So you could put that one at the very top so people could go check it out. All right, cool. Thanks a lot. And we'll, I guess we'll catch you on the next episode.
Sounds good. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. Chris, you had a great idea for the sound check and it hit home with me, talking about things that were okay when we were younger, but we won't do it anymore. And maybe it's because we're becoming old grouchy men and we're like, I don't know. So what do you have? What kind of stuff would you do when you were younger?
So I think the biggest one that stands out, and I cannot shake this, it's been 25 years, but when I was in college in Seattle, and this was maybe late 90s, early 2000s, our football team made it to a bowl game down in San Diego. So relatively close, just down the West Coast. But of course, the game took place over the holidays, right before New Year's. And so my wife and I, you know, girlfriend at the time, we wanted to attend. And being poor college students, this was a last minute trip. It was around the holidays. Airline flights, no way. Those would be out of the question. And I don't know how much they were at the time, but that's just something you wouldn't do as a college student. So of course, we wanted to go to the game, looked around, and Greyhound had a deal. I think it was, I don't remember exactly, but probably $40 a person each way. That's a steal. So we thought, yeah, let's do this. We have no money. Let's get down there and hang out. So we left Seattle one morning, probably 7 a.m., and we get down there to San Diego the following evening. So it was about a 36-hour bus ride down there. And let me just tell you, it was terrible. would never do it again. I mean, we were crammed on the bus. They woke us up in Sacramento at 2 a.m. to clean the bus. We all had to get off, get back on. There was no food. And 36 hours, I mean, never do it again. And looking back on it, it would have been a 3-hour plane flight.
Man, like, how'd you get food then? Like, you would stop every now and then, and then there'd be like a food court at the bus station or something, or what?
That's a mystery. I was actually talking to my wife right before this, and I was typing this out and bringing back all these bad memories. I asked her, what do we do for food and drink? And she was like, I don't remember. I blocked out that whole thing. I put that in the past and never to be spoken of again until, I guess, today. But I really don't remember. I think we just didn't eat.
Good fast, a 36-hour fast. Man, that's nuts, dude. I've never taken a bus, and occasionally, you know what? I've never seriously thought about it, especially like nowadays, like this is the point. Like, we'd be like, ah, you know what? Even though it's $40, I would pay like, you know, 15 times that to save the time and not ride on a bus and all that kind of stuff. Plus they kick you out to clean it. I never would have thought that. Okay. So there's a few, I mean, that kind of similar, like I would drive almost anywhere. It's like, oh yeah, we could drive there for like way cheaper than flying, to your point, even though it would take whatever, couple days. But turns out I like road trips, so I still do those. I think one of the big things, you know, number one, like flights in general. So there's some really cheap flights for like, I think it's like $100 on Frontier, but it's like a red eye, or it leaves at $5.50 or whatever. And it's like, now we'll definitely pay a little extra, so we have like a more normal flight time, so we don't have to wake up too early. So that one's pretty common. We still stay at some pretty cheap hotels occasionally. It's often because we're on a road trip and there's not that many options, but there's not that many options that allow dogs too. So we're traveling with Georgie, and a lot of times it would be like a Motel 6 or some off-brand or something equivalent. So they're kind of, you know, they're old motels. They've been like renovated. So there's some kind, like the flooring's new, the beds are kind of new, and it looks, you know, nicer. But then you get to like the bathroom fixtures and it's like, that sink's like 35 years old. Like, you know, that's old, it's stained. There's like just some weird stuff in there, but it keeps us humble, you know? So when we're in a nice place, we know, we're like, oh, you know what? This Hyatt is much nicer than the Motel 6 in the middle of nowhere. So.
Yeah, man. I mean, that keeps you grounded.
Yeah. And it's not too bad. You know, the worst part is the sometimes, not always, but sometimes you'll get the continental breakfast at those places. Sometimes it's good. A lot of times, especially in the middle of nowhere, it's just like, I mean, it looks like gas station boiled eggs and other kind of weird stuff. And you're like, oh man, this is not good. But anyway, yeah, there's a handful of things. The other, like now that we're getting around to just like, we were talking about parking earlier, like if we're going to some show, we'll pay to park like much closer. Like before we're like, oh yeah, we're on this remote lot. There's someone like watching the lot who is, we don't even know if it's an official lot, but now we're like, you know what? We're going to park at the venue and we'll pay like the extra money so we don't have to walk as far. And we know it's an actual like legit place that we're supposed to park. So anyway, all right, cool. Anything else on this? Any thoughts?
I think for me, I think parking is where I still draw the line. I will never cross that line. We'll still go to events in downtown Seattle, sporting events, concerts. And I know the places to park now that are free. I will easily walk a mile or more. So I don't get you on that one.
Well, the one thing in respect on that, but I was going to say in Denver, I don't know if there's like really any actual like free places to park, but like the delta between like one parking spot and another is like, it's so small where we're like, ah, you know what? It doesn't matter. However, I think maybe Dusty Young found this and we're starting to like reserve the parking ahead of time. And it's only like a block away. It's still pretty good. It's like secure. There's a gate, blah, blah, blah. So like we'll do that one. And it's so close, unless it's like raining or snowing. We're like, ah, you know what? This one's fine. And it's enough of a savings. But yeah. Anyway, parking. It's crazy. It always stresses me out. So